You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We are still in the conversation of how to see and execute and operationalize the revitalization of Malaysia's economy post-lockdown. And I hesitate to say post-COVID because COVID is going to be with us for a long time to come. I hearken your attention back to the interviews that we've done last week with the pharmaceutical industry, with the insurance industry and many others. They are saying that this is here to stay. So now we have to think about how do we work around and revitalize our economy in the realm of COVID. And one such industry that is going to handle this particular conversation quite seriously and have to look into this matter quite seriously is, of course, MHTC. MHTC is the Malaysia healthcare business industry. And, of course, they are here because they want to address two critical ideas. Number one, the tourism business of Malaysia. And number two, the healthcare business of Malaysia. Joining us is the CEO of MHTC, Madam Shireen Azli. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's do a quick roundup of how MHTC is performing under such trying times right now.
Good, thank you, Ibrahim. Thank you for having MHTC here, and I'm Shireen. So, talking about this whole COVID pandemic, I think in general, tourism industry is highly impacted, and we are no exception. So, you're talking about medical travel or healthcare travel, medical tourism. This is the industry that Malaysia Healthcare Travel Council is looking after. So when we, before COVID in 2019, we were recording 1.7 billion ringgit revenue to the hospitals and contributing up to 9 billion ringgit into the economy. And if you're looking into the overall tourism receipts, that's representing about 10% of overall Malaysia's tourism receipt. And tourism receipt in Malaysia is third highest contributor to the GDP. So that's significant. And this year, when COVID hit, you know, okay, we still got patients in the first quarter, but realistically, you know, we are seeing changes in behaviours, we are seeing new norms. So we are expecting about 70% dip this year from the level that we were forecasting. So this year we were targeting about 2 billion ringgit in terms of hospital revenue and about 10 billion ringgit contribution to the economy. So realistically now we are looking at only about 500 million ringgit contribution to the hospital and 3 billion ringgit contribution to the economy. So it is a significant hit that we're taking. But
is reported previously about 2 weeks ago in the media about these revision downwards of medical tourism revenue. But I want to focus a little bit more about the idea of how will this industry move forward under COVID. The borders are still closed, largely speaking, but the senior minister in charge of defense and of course security, Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri, did say that some industries will reopen in terms of allowing foreigners to come in.
Yes.
One of them is, of course, medical healthcare. This is has received mixed reviews from the public, largely because they understand what MHTC is trying to do, but they are still concerned about the types of individuals coming into our borders. Could you elucidate some ideas of how to allay the fears that is born out of the idea of foreigners coming into our country and therefore putting ourselves at risk?
Yeah. I mean, Malaysia has done great in terms of managing COVID. And the last thing we want to do is, open unnecessary risk in terms of bringing in patients into the country without proper protocols. So what we have done is that since the very first MCO, MHTC has put together standard operating procedures, SOP, together with the Ministry of Health, Majlis Keselamatan Negara, and all Jabatan Immigration, for example. And we have been working with them in making sure that we have an SOP that will minimise any potential risk when it comes to imported cases into the country. So we are looking at that. So when we put up the proposal for us to be considered, medical travel to be considered as the first business sector to be opened into the to welcome patients in, it was well received because we have had the SOP in place. So the SOP was approved on the 30th of June, and the SOP includes, for example, patients will have to apply to come into Malaysia before, and they have to get that approval from MHTC before they come in. So they have to have their hospitals, registering their requests. They have to do the pre-departure COVID test 3 days before, and only they can travel into Malaysia after getting the approval from us. And then when they get into Malaysia, we will be welcoming them from the aerobridge, taking them straight through immigration and straight to our lounges in our airports. And then from there, they go straight to the hospital. So they don't interact with unnecessary, public, channels, etc. They go straight to the hospital. They will be subjected to another COVID test, and they will be isolated for the 14th day, for 14 days in the hospital, together with their companion. So, and then they cannot leave the hospital until the 13th day. They do the third test. Then only they can leave from hospital, and they have to leave straight to their home country. So they cannot go and roam around and do technically the tourism activities as normal. This is to minimize the any interaction, any exposure that we could have or we could get from an imported case coming
in. The issue here is that SOPs look good. Mm-hmm. They are well agreed upon by all parties. But when it is executed and done in real life, there's some lapses. We've seen that a lot. Not just in Malaysia, everywhere around the world.
Yes.
So what's the story in terms of complying with the SOP that you guys
That's the reason why we only limit to hospitals that are registered under MHTC. And then what we do is that we make sure that the hospitals have their own internal policies as well to make sure that, for example, when patients are doing isolation or quarantine, they don't break that, and that kind of thing. So with our member hospitals, we have about currently 69 of them, but I think about 11 now are willing to take in the patients through the strict SOP. So we must make sure that the hospitals are ready. We must make sure that, the machineries are ready along the way. And we were very clear that for phase one, patients can only come under medical evacuation, chartered flights, or private jets. So technically, they are, again, not exposed to commercial flights. Only phase two allows them to get on commercial flights that are coming from so-called the green zone countries. So what we are doing is that we are doing this phase by phase in the red, so that we are ready to have a full rebound when the borders fully open. Even then, when the borders are open, we have the phase three deployment, which includes them still following the SOP even when the borders are open. So technically, when you look at all the different SOPs that have been set up for foreigners to come into Malaysia, medical travellers are actually the tightest, and I think it's actually the most protected group instead of just, people coming in and doing like before. That's where I think the comfort, and we've got the approval to start receiving patients from the 1st of July. Mm. And alhamdulillah, until now, we don't have any of those breaches coming from medical travellers. So okay. I think that's very comforting.
All right. We'll take one short break before we continue our conversation with MHTC. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for staying on with us. Let's talk a little bit more about the Malaysian tourism industry per se, not necessarily healthcare. Mm. This is one sector that has been severely impacted. We're talking about loss of jobs, businesses, some of which will never ever come back again. How would the business of healthcare try to salvage and save, if I may use the word, in terms of some of the tourism aspect of MHTC's work?
Okay. If you look into the overall tourism, of course, you're talking about there are domestic tourism and international tourism. So let's focus on international tourism that actually brings in the foreign exchange into Malaysia. So out of that, MHTC plays a big role in the sense that medical tourism actually contributes a significant amount. I told you just now it's about 10% out of the total tourism receipts for the country. And it's a significant amount for the international tourism as well. So how do we contribute? Actually, one ringgit that a patient spent in a hospital generates about 4 ringgit into the economy, for accommodation, travel, food, shopping, etc. So that's a significant multiplier that's actually contributing to the
receipts. How did you work this out?
Because, for example, there's a study already on this in terms of how the multiplier is calculated that has been done.
Who did the study?
Not MHTC. It's actually an independent group in the region that was done.
For public awareness?
Yes. You can actually pull it out. I'll give you the link later if you're interested. So that one you can pull out.
No, I mean, not later, now.
I don't have the link at the moment.
So they who's this body?
If you go into Malaysia, our website malaysiahealthcare.org, you can download our Malaysia Healthcare Chronicle. Inside there, you can have the details of the
studies
and everything.
So they have worked out that for every RM1 that they spend on the healthcare aspect, RM4 will be generated to the economy. Because of all the ancillary factors.
Yes, and also wellness and dental and wellness tourism.
Okay.
And so aesthetics.
When you say things like 75% of medical tourism revenue receipt will be revised downwards, we're looking at a significant, huge amount of money. That 10% of that total receipt pie of tourism industry, we're going to see maybe just 2 or 3% of the original pie. Is that it?
Basically, if you're looking at the total target, let's say this year for tourism, earlier it was 100 billion that they were targeting for 2020. Now, we were supposed to contribute about 10 billion to it.
Yeah.
But now we are only contributing about 2 to 3 billion only.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's about it. So about 2 to 3%.
Okay. While this number is staggering, people are aware.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how medical tourism can actually help.
This
in
is
the
why
revitalization of the economy.
Because if you look at the current situation, if you are going to open up for any tourism, other tourists at the moment, it's very risky. So that's why we put in the effort to open medical tourism bubble first. Because you know that it's contributing to the economy at the 4 times, or maybe now less because they can't go shopping freely and everything, maybe about 3 times. But still, it's actually the multiplier effect is still significant, especially when the patients coming in are not just patients coming in for cough and cold. They're coming in for complex treatment. Mm. The ones that have come in since 1st July, they're all coming for oncology treatment, cardiology, pediatrics treatment. And these are actually lengthy, complex treatment.
I was about
treatment.
To say that. It's recurring and it's long-term, sometimes even palliative care when talking about oncology.
Well, we hope not palliative at the moment, because we don't want them to get into the level that if they are going to pass on here. I think that's not what we are looking for. We are looking for patients who can actually recover
by coming. But the story is that it's still a long-term care
instead
of a single job and then you're done.
Yeah. So then with that effect, it helps jumpstart the international tourism. Because if you wait for the borders to open, we don't know when. At this juncture.
And it's probably never.
We never know. So that's the reason why we initiated this whole medical tourism bubble to start first. If you didn't do it, the SOPs and everything, then Majlis Keselamatan Negara and even the senior minister himself wouldn't be confident enough to say, let's open this up. MOH, for example, our KKM, will not say that I agree to your to bring in medical travel, because it's going to be risking our Malaysians. So we looked at all that, and MHTC took that effort to build that SOP, so that we know that while we are trying to jumpstart the tourism economy, we are also protecting the interest of Malaysia and Malaysians first and foremost. So I think that's where we thought ahead and said, okay, we are going to convince them, let's open medical travel bubble first for tourism. So at least we're getting that 3 times, or the 4. I don't think we're going to get the 4 times now in this kind of economy, but at least 3 times is a lot in terms of multiplier into the economy.
However critical I sound, I'm actually rooting for you guys to work.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
But there is that risk that whether or not the opening up any sort of border will put ourselves at risk. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of people that are normally the medical travelers. Prior to starting this interview, I said to you that my understanding is that probably it's from the MENA region. Mm. But is my assumption correct?
No. Actually, MENA region contributes, perhaps if in total, they are maybe in the top 10 arrivals, not individual countries. But the main contributor to our medical tourist numbers, last year, 2019, we had about 1.3 million arrivals. In 2018, the global market research by Lang Birzon, based in UK, has recognized Malaysia as the country with the number one volume for medical travelers. So we are currently ranked number one before COVID. So we are the number one medical travel volume. And then out of that, 60% of our arrivals of that 1.3 million are coming from Indonesia. Second is China. And then after that, India. And the rest are from Southeast Asia and Indochina region. So if you're looking into that that region itself, you know, you have India, China, Southeast Asia. Technically, we are nearly half of the world population, target-wise. So Middle East, while they do come to Malaysia, they do not make the bulk of it, partly okay. because of the travel times and everything.
I'm sorry. The countries that you mentioned just now sends a lot of red bells, you know.
For now, yes.
Indonesia, China.
Yes.
How are we managing that?
Okay, that's why currently, if they want to come in, they will have to come in only with medical evacuation, chartered flights or private jets.
Yeah,
and now we are allowing chartered ferry, which so that means they don't...
Chartered ferry?
Yeah, because they don't get exposed to the commercial transport. Then that's where the risk would be. And 3 days before, they will have to test for COVID. When they arrive, MHTC staff will welcome them and take them straight to their transport for hospitals.
Yeah.
So and then they have to do their test again. So that's why we are limiting the interaction or access or any kind of risk along the way. And our hospitals are the ones who are willing to take that responsibility to manage those patients.
Okay, let's do a quick real-time analysis here. The announcement to allow for medical travelers to come in started on July 1st. Mm-hmm. We're done with July. Were the numbers meeting your expectations?
Okay, to be honest, we didn't set it very high because it was more of a trial and error for us to see.
Yeah.
So we had more, in terms of general inquiries, we had more than 1,000. Actually, we had thousands of general inquiries.
This is more than you expected?
Yeah. In that sense, we more than
expected
for inquiries. But then we filtered it because I think many were not clear that they can only come in
via
to those chartered medical evacuation, chartered flights, chartered ferry. So then when we mentioned to them that you have to spend, that's where the numbers tapered down to about 200 plus. Then they submitted their applications, and currently we have less than 100 already approved, because we are also strict in terms of vetting through their cases. You know, there are applications coming, they want to do dental, which is not urgent. So we did not put that, we did not approve that, for example. But for those who are coming with, how would I say, legit, treatments required, then we look into that.
What constitutes like
legit? I mean, like, for example, when talking about oncology, they need to come in for chemotherapy and stuff. For cardiology, maybe certain treatment like even bypass and stuff like that. For pediatrics, we also get a lot of pediatric cases because they're quite urgent. Otherwise, it can be life-threatening for the child,
for example.
So those kind of things we actually approved to come in.
So who approves this?
Currently, the approval comes from MHTC, from us, from MHTC.
Does MOH have any say in this?
Yeah, because MOH has approved the procedure. Because MHTC is an agency under Ministry of Health. So MOH has already approved the SOP. So now we actually work with our private hospitals that are going to be receiving those patients. And then we work with immigration. So immigration will do the necessary immigration check. And then we will verify with the hospitals and everything. Then we will issue the approval letter.
Are you happy with the July numbers, the actual patients
actually,
coming?
Actually, to be honest, we are quite happy with the quality of patients.
Okay.
Not so much the numbers.
No,
the
that's the way to go moving forward.
Yeah,
previously, you were thinking a lot more,
and
I understand.
Yeah.
But now we've got to be a little more selective.
Yes, yeah.
So what's the projection like towards the end of the year?
So that's where, when it comes to the projection, that's where we are looking at a total of 500 million in terms of revenue. In terms of numbers, we have yet to come to a comfortable level.
That's my question.
Yeah.
So you don't have a range?
For now, no, because it's a new norm. There's going to be changes in behavior of people in terms of traveling. Even though they need to travel, they may weigh their circumstances. And also, it depends very much in terms of when other countries are willing to allow their patients, citizens to travel. So, like, for example, for example, New Zealand, they may be the green countries, right?
100 days, right? That's what they say.
So they may be the green countries. We may welcome them, but if the country says that, you know, we are not allowing our citizens to travel, then it may not happen immediately. So, to be honest with you, we are more comfortable to focus on achieving the quality and hence the revenue side of things rather than the number of patients that we used to.
Let's talk a little bit about the tourism healthcare bubble per se. If they are isolated, coming in from end to end, point gate of entry, all the way to the hospital, 14 days, how do they enjoy that tourism aspect of the country? Because people who are listening to this, if they are healthcare professionals, they might not have a direct say into how the hospital works.
Mm-mm.
But there are people in the tourism sector that are watching this show, that's trying to understand what you guys are doing, and they might want to have some form of dip in that 2 ringgit, 3 ringgit pie, or even that 4 ringgit pie that you mentioned just now. How do they get in on the gravy, I suppose?
For now, for phase one, it's going to be very minimal. It's going to be more just a transportation, more from, in terms perhaps, not so much tourism, more from the medical evacuation or flights, arrangements and chartered flights, but not so much on the tourism, the fun part of things. It's not even the shopping part of things, if you ask me, for now, for phase one. But we're already easing into phase two. So technically, even easing into phase two, I think with the green countries, it gives a little bit more of flexibility, perhaps, in terms of these patients procuring services from tourism. Maybe you can do online shopping and stuff like that. So we are looking at utilizing our digital assets to enable those kind of things to come through and reaching to our patients. So actually, that's what we are doing now. Not only talking about the SOP, not only talking about people coming in. What we are doing now is that we are pushing a strong PR and branding campaign outside of Malaysia, so that, and with all this first phase in place already and everything, so we build the confidence for people outside to know that Malaysia is a country that can handle COVID pandemic. We have been doing very well. We are now rated third in Asia Pacific in the preparation of handling cancer, for example. So all these stories are pushing out so that the trust level maintains or even gets better. Malaysia remains top of mind, and they can see that patients coming in the first phase, in the second phase, are well taken care of. So it builds the confidence, and when we relax our borders, this group will come
be
in
among the first.
Among the first to come in, and Malaysia is in their top of mind. So that's the main thing. So while we do, it's a two-prong. You can do the campaign, and yet we must make sure that patients come in based on the phases, and they are well taken care of and treated. At the same time, we deploy full digital assets, looking into telemedicine, teleconsult, e-pharmacy, so that even our patients that are currently not making their travels, they can still access to our doctors, they can still access to their normal medications, etc. Because that's very important to have that continuum of care.
That's the next topic that we're going to talk about right after this break. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for staying on with us. I'm with Shireen Azli of MHTC. We're talking about the healthcare business. We're talking about the tourism business. Let's talk a little bit about that bit of digitization and teleconsulting and telehealthcare, for that matter, prior to us going to that break just now. We know now that there's a lot of services, particularly in the healthcare business, that talks about online consultation, even remote treatment. I've seen one case where the doctor was asking the patient via phone call, via Zoom or whatever, on self-care, and the medication and all that will be given to that patient via the mail, meaning that there is an extensive online care taking place without the doctor being physically there. 2 years ago, I went to CES in Las Vegas, and they were talking, or they were showcasing the marvels of 5G. They were talking about remote surgery, because the surgeon was wearing these goggles and these gloves, and they were doing this remote surgery. Everybody's like, oh, this is cool, but they can't imagine an application of it. Mm. Now you're you're putting two and two together, where active physician / surgeon healthcare has to be rendered to the patients, and now we have to solve it via virtual means. Is this a reality for Malaysia in the near term?
If you look in globally, I think amongst all industry, healthcare is the least disrupted, partly because of the nature of the services itself. We patients, we still want to see our doctors. We want to have that, we want our doctors to check on us and touch us and stuff like that, So historically, we haven't been adopting technology very well, other than perhaps robotics and, you know, how you do your surgeries and stuff like that, but very little compared to other industry. So COVID had, what COVID has done is basically pushing that, you know, because
forces everyone.
Yes,
actually.
Yeah, you know,
even my grandma.
you need to look at the new ways of doing things, and you know, if you like, for our patients abroad, it as much as they may be reluctant, they will have to see how they need to reach out to their doctors. So I think this is where, for us now, we are enabling the platform. We are enabling, we are encouraging our hospitals to get on board. We are encouraging the doctors to open their doors, to teleconsult, etc. We are working with pharmacies to look into e-pharmacies and, you know, posting the medication through our hospitals, etc. But in the end, I must say that the take-up rate is not as encouraging, because, again, people would choose to wait to the time when I can make the trip to go and visit my doctor.
I'm sorry, sometimes conditions doesn't allow you to wait. I mean, if you have an engagement with an oncologist, the cancer is growing.
Yeah. So now that's why they prefer, if they have money, they prefer to spend on their medical evacuation or chartered flights, or, you know, whatever it takes. Because healthcare is
rather than digital adoption.
There's only so much. In truth, for healthcare, there's only so much you can do under digital adoption, especially when you're having complex cases like you know, cancer and stuff. I think at the end of the day, we are human and we want someone to care for us and look after us.
Yeah.
So maybe you can have, the difference is that you may have the first consultation through teleconsult.
Yeah.
The second one, but eventually you really have to make that trip.
What about mental health and also therapy?
Currently, I think this is, again, you know, to many countries in this region, it's still a taboo kind of a topic, not for Malaysia necessarily, but other countries. So for them to be talking again on digital and stuff like that, it doesn't give that kind of comfort.
No way. Yes. This is interesting.
You know, I mean, that's the reality, Rahim. You know, it's as much as we want people to adopt it.
No, I'm not rejecting your information.
Yeah,
I'm just saying this is new information.
Yes. Unfortunately, you know, even when the hospitals embarked on the teleconsult and telemedicine, they said, unfortunately, Shireen, our patients are still not taking up the way that we would like them to be. So they're still waiting. The question, they will still come back to the hospital and ask, when are you allowing us to fly in?
Okay.
And our hotline in MHTC...
But that bites well for your industry, right?
The demand is insatiable. Yeah. But you must make sure that we also take care of our patients at the same time.
And the country.
Yeah, the country. So I think this is a balance that we are... Actually, from the very first day of MCO, our patients never stop knocking on our door to come in.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why I told the Ministry of MOTEC, Ministry of Tourism, I told them that there's one tourism sector that people will, you know, the demand is still there, it would be medical tourism, because you can't...
No one's going to dispute that.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
So that's why we are preparing ourselves as much as we can to start in phases, and at the same time still deploying our digital assets.
Mm.
We are doing a lot of health talks.
Mm.
We are telling them to take care of themselves, how to take care of themselves against COVID-19.
Mm.
We are even on mental health. So we're educating our patients across borders. But it is a challenging process, if I can say that.
Let's draw this conversation to a close. How do you think your industry will perform in the next few months?
Okay, in the next few months, as I said, we are looking at nothing more than that 500 million revenue and that 2-3 billion contribution to the economy. But what's more important is what we're doing now to get the recovery next year.
Mm.
So next year, we are looking at...
I'm sorry, you're still optimistic about next year?
No, technically, that's what we're doing. If we're not looking into next year, reality is this year, we're not expecting people to, you know, land into Malaysia the way they did it before. So we have to prepare for next year. So whatever that we do this year is all about maintaining the continuum of care, embarking on a strong PR branding exercise, so Malaysia remains top of mind, sharing them the how we are prepared for them to come in and for the rebound. So these are the three things that we are pushing out now. We are doing all we can so that when we relax, I'm not saying opening our borders, when we relax our borders, the patients will remember Malaysia is the country for them to come and get their treatment.
Fantastic way to end the conversation. That was Shireen Azli of MHTC. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawan.com, look for Notepad over there. Plenty of interviews like this can be found on that website. Also, you can watch these kind of interviews on your mobile devices. Just download the Astro Awan app wherever you get the application. Until next time, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.